Now back to Cap and Haw on WGNplus.com and CSN Chicago.
There's no secret he's an outstanding basketball coach and extremely successful. He's done an incredible job here in Chicago. Be careful what you ask for.
Amen.
Tom, I know you know there's been a lot of speculation about your future here. Do you expect to be coaching this team here next season?
Yeah, I mean, until they tell me I'm not, I expect to be here. So that's the way I'm approaching it.
There was the question from Nick Friedell that everyone wanted the answer to, and you heard the commentary on the broadcast and then Thibs saying, look, until they tell me I'm not, I expect to be the coach of the Chicago Bulls. Cap and Haw rolls on CSN. Mark Carmen in for David, but David's with us from California where he's covering the Blackhawks. All right, let's move to basketball. I read your column over the weekend. I think it would be a bad decision to bring Tom Thibodeau back, and you know I'm his biggest fan. You cannot allow this sideshow to fester one more second.
Well, you're entitled to your opinion, and a lot of people believe that, you know, that to be the case as well. I just don't know why you would concede that, you know, it has to be a sideshow. I mean, you're a professional, you're an adult. You have, you know, I have yet to hear a grievance or a difference or a situation that rises to the level that would make it irreconcilable. I just don't think that if you're Jerry Reinsdorf, you can accept the fact that you have the best coach the franchise has had since Phil Jackson and let him walk away because he can't get along with management and because management can't get along with him. There is shared responsibility on both sides. If you're listening or watching, hoping somebody takes a side in this, there's no agenda here. There's no pro-management. There's no pro-Tom Thibodeau. This is taking a step back, taking a deep breath, and asking people to let common sense prevail. You have an opportunity to continue the sort of upward, the ascension for your franchise with a coach that has been more good than bad and has a 647 winning percentage and has flaws. But you have to help him work through those flaws. And compromise should be the goal, not the enemy. And that's the problem here. Everybody wants to draw a line in the sand and wants to take a polarizing point of view and wants to, you know, dig in until it's not for the best thing for the organization. Gar, Foreman, and John Paxson are paid well, and they're great guys. And so is Tom Thibodeau. But Gar and Pax, they have an obligation to do the best thing for the Bulls organization. And it's just my opinion that changing coaches with this coach is not the best thing for the Bulls organization.
Would you advise then, David, hey, listen, if you're Jerry Reinsdorf, you come down, you bring Gar and Pax in a room, listen, lay off the tips. Let him run the team how he wants to play it. If he wants to practice, you allow him to practice. If he wants to play Joakim 35 to 40 minutes, this guy's our coach. I'm going to trust him to make the best decisions. If you were Reinsdorf, would you do something like that?
I would want, you know, both sides to figure out a way to get along. I would find it, you know, there's a fine line between, you know, what the kind of, we've talked about it a lot. You know, Jerry Reinsdorf likes to let his guys do the job and likes the value of creative tension and you know, organizational friction sometimes can create good results and positive results and winning. But sometimes that, you know, that creative tension can shatter a championship window. And I think that's what's happening here with the Bulls. I want the argument to be made, and Cap, more power to you if you can make this, anybody. How are the Bulls better off without Tom Thibodeau next year with Fred Hoiberg, Alvin Gentry, coach to be named later? I just don't think that you can introduce another coach unless it's Greg Popovich or Doc Rivers and tell me that the Bulls are better off and closer to a championship in 2015-16 than they are if Tom Thibodeau returns and you try to, you know, tweak rather than transform.
I understand your point. The two sides cannot coexist, and bringing them in a room with Jerry Reinsdorf going figure it out won't change the fact that Pax and Gar has not spoken in a substantive conversation with Tom Thibodeau since November. You can't coexist an NBA team like that and run it. I feel terrible. I love Thibs. I think he's a great basketball coach, and I like him as a guy. I'm just telling you, This thing is beyond repair. No chance you could save it.
Well, none. If that's true, and two guys who work together that closely, if that is true, and they haven't spoken like that, you know, in months, and then shame on both of them. You know, it's not just one person's fault, because if you allow, you know, a relationship to deteriorate to that degree, then it's a two-sided situation. It's not just, you know, and frankly, I don't know that I would be that confident in letting in that the next coach relationship would be that much better if I'm allowing, you know, my coach to do his job and not speaking to him for 6 months. I mean, that's not the way that you win championships, and that's not the way that you do your job. And I don't, I just, look, that's okay. Everybody has their own way to look at this, and I just am not willing to concede that, you know, letting a guy walk away without trying to have some sort of intervention from the ownership level makes the most sense. And I think that if you're Jerry Reinsdorf, if you're Michael Reinsdorf, you've got to look at this and say, you know, are we going to look back at this in 5 years, in 5 months, in 10 years, and say, what in the world did we do? We replaced who with whom? And say we thought we were better off and closer to a title. That's, to me, I just think that's unacceptable. It may be the ultimate result of all of this. I understand that. I'm not blind. I don't have my head in the sand. But to let this dissolve and be destroyed without having another shot at, you know, reconciliation, you know, it's negligent in my opinion.
And the Bulls would make the argument, David, and I'm sure that you're well aware of what their argument would be, but their argument's going to be that, hey, Nikola Mirotic is going to flourish with a less pressure coach on him, and maybe Tony Snell will take off as well, and same thing for Doug McDermott, who was never really given a chance, and will the minutes on the starters will be less, so maybe Jimmy Butler will be fresher. I mean, that's the argument they're going to make, and how they'll be better, right?
Well, Tom, I mean, you're the guy. You're out there. How far away is this team really? I mean, is this team is very it fell short of its goal. You can't look at this season and be happy with the way it ended. You can't feel like you had a successful year. But when you look at what you have and what in comparison to what other teams in the East have, I mean, are you really, is the sky really falling?
I don't think so. I don't think it is.
So when you do that and you look at, okay, what are you doing to your franchise? If you have a roster you feel like you can win with and you feel like you can compete with and contend with, now you're going to start over. What's the real cost of starting over? That's the question that I don't think is people are really realizing now in the midst of all this emotion. You know, remove emotion from the equation. How about that? Be a professional. It's not. It's a professional basketball association or basketball team, not a personal basketball team, and I think a lot of these feelings are getting in the way, and I have a ton of respect for all guys in both sides of this, but I don't know objectively how you can look at this roster and conclude that, you know, you're on your way to being a lottery team. You're just not.
I'm not saying a lottery team, but I don't think this team as currently constituted, I don't care who the coach is, dig up John Wooden, I don't think they can win a title as currently constituted. I don't think Joakim Noah ever gets back to the level. They should have moved him last summer. I don't think they have enough talent on this roster of young, vibrant guys. There's a report out this morning that there's tension between Jimmy Butler and Derrick Rose trying to coexist on the roster. I just think that the whole thing is there's a lot of work that's got to be done.
Well, sure. I mean, if they had a roster that could win an NBA championship, they wouldn't be sitting at home today. I mean, they were exposed. They were, you know, Gasol's injury at the wrong time didn't help, and they have flaws. The roster has flaws. Tell me how changing coaches makes them better.
The other side of that, too, is you. Yeah.
That's a legitimate question. How does changing coaches make them a better team and closer to winning a title than they are right now?
My point is that I don't believe they can win as currently constituted, and you cannot spend another year with the tension that exists between Tom and Gar and Pax. So if you're going to stay loyal to your GM and your executive VP, you cannot bring him back as your head coach, much as if I owned a team, I would want him coaching my team. There, I'm not saying you get any better, but you cannot go through another year like this. It cannot happen.
But he's going big picture. Like, if you're Paxton Garr, you're still trying to win a title, right? You're not going to blow up the team. You're not trading Noah and whoever else. So your goal is to win.
You can't win with Tom as your head coach as currently constituted because of the problem between management and the coach. You cannot.
You were a LeBron shot in game four, and an 11-point lead away from a 3-1 lead without Pau Gasol. I mean, you were right there.
And they didn't have Kevin Love, and they had a banged-up Kyrie Irving. So you're really not right there.
Right, but you don't
are what your record says you are, and you got beat in 6 games.
Yep. Okay.
Well, if you are what your record says you are, then they're ignoring the past 5 years if they fire him, if they get rid of him. Because if you are what the record says you are one of the most consistent teams in the NBA. And if I'm a general manager and if I'm an executive vice president, all I want out of my team is consistency. I really don't care if you like me. I want to win. And if you are putting that as the bottom line goal, then you have to do whatever you can to maintain that consistency. And, you know, hey, God bless Fred Hoiberg, but good luck, because he's unproven. And so is Steve Kerr. I know people will say that, but I just don't know that Fred Hoiberg or Alvin Gentry or whoever you introduce at the press conference that's coming, if you part company with your current head coach, Tom Thibodeau, you know, that is going to be a tough sell on the fact that you're selling improvement, change, and you're getting closer to a title.
But I don't think they really care about trying to sell it to the fan base. The games will all be sold out. People are still going to watch, and they're handing, in their opinion, they're handing a roster to whoever it is that they feel he can win with. Now, if it's Alvin Gentry, I think that's a joke. Alvin Gentry has been a failed head coach in multiple spots. You tell me it's Fred Hoiberg. I see what Steve Kerr's done this year. Okay, let's see what he does.
Well, you don't have to sell it to the fan base. You don't have to sell it, period. But you have to, be able to justify it professionally, and you have to be able to justify what you're doing here. And that's what I mean. If you're able, if you believe that you can justify that, this organization is better off if you introduce one of those guys. I'm going to maintain that you gave up, you surrendered, you put you let your personal feelings destroy your professional progress, and that's just the way that's just the way I'm looking at this. When you take a step back and remove emotion from the equation, because they're paid to remove emotion from the equation.
How aggressive do you think they are with the roster? Because I'm going back and forth on that myself. So partly I think they're just that close, and hey, add a little bit. The other part is you might make a major move with one of your front court players.
I don't think they do that, Carm. I mean, it'd be very unlike it. Be kind of like expecting somebody who behaves in a certain way, a real quiet kid in class to speak up and, scream out and heckle the teacher. It's in their character to make a big move like that, is it? I mean, am I missing something? Because
no.
To them, that's what makes this whole, blow up the coaching staff situation thing so unusual, because they tend to embrace the status quo. And you have a roster that, flawed. Yes, it is flawed. Yes, Joakim Noah has issues. Look around the league. There are a lot of flawed rosters. There's a lot of issues, teams with issues. I just don't think they're going to make anything move that's drastic. Although, if they're changing coaches, they're signaling starting over, all bets are off, and you get what you pay for, and then ultimately they will get what they deserve if they do that.
D-Haw, have fun out in Cali. We'll read your column again on Game 2, and we'll see if the Hawks can get this thing tied up.
All right, guys, take care.
Talk to you. There he is, David Haw, who you hear with me on this show each and every day. He's in California covering the Blackhawks for his columnist job with the Chicago Tribune.
Top 30 things to do in Anaheim includes bus tours. There is a Yorba Regional Park. There's a Bottle Logic Brewing. Maybe Hall will be doing a Bottle Logic Brewing. I mean, he's got some time in between game one and two.
Hey, I just did a bourbon tour.
Exactly.
Maybe he does a Bottle Logic Brewing tour.
What about the Anaheim Farmers Market?
Hey, have you ever heard of a place called Disneyland?
That's a potential visiting point as well, yes.
How about an Angels game? Are they home tonight?
Doesn't he see enough sports? Don't they see the Angels? You'd go there.
I did. I took Brett out there 2 summers ago. We had a blast.
Yeah, well.
A lot of fun.
I would recommend Off the Beaten Path, like the Gallery Theater. Looks great.
Yeah, it sounds like fun. Illinois Craft Brewers Guild is proudly celebrating the 6th Annual Chicago Craft Beer Week. Hashtag CCBW now through Sunday. Each year, Chicago comes together to celebrate 11 days of local craft beer. This Saturday, it all culminates with the city's largest craft beer party in the park, hosted within beautiful Wells Park. Wells Park, huge 15-acre park, located in the heart of Lincoln Square at Lincoln and Montrose. Chicago Craft Beer Week features over 90 venues, 400-plus events in 77 Chicago neighborhoods. Create your own CCBW schedule at Shy Beer Week. That's CHIBeerWeek.com. ShyBeerWeek.com. If you're into craft beer, you'll love this week-long celebration. Everything sponsored by Goose Island, All Rise Brewing, Red Eye Chicago, Revolution Brewing, Draft Magazine, McCarve Lagunitas. Never heard of them. And Lakeshore Beverage.
Did he just say Lagunitas?
How do you pronounce it?
I believe it's Nitus at the very minimum, right?
I have
Jacobson
no
doesn't know either. I feel like you've been. It's a delicious beverage. Highly recommend.
You've had it?
Yeah, absolutely.
I've never had it. Take a time out and go back to some calls. 312-235.
What about
2525? Also,
there's a problem with Butler and Rose.
Interesting article that Jason Goff and Dan Bernstein had down the dial. We'll get into that. Derrick Rose and Jimmy Buckets might be at odds a bit. We'll talk about it. It's all coming up. Cap'n Haw.
From Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is Cap'n Haw on WGNplus.com and CSN Chicago.
Seeing how hard he works in the gym, after practice, just shooting, you just got to take more. We always tell him to take more, but it's just going to be up to him to break that seal.
That was D. Rose talking about Jimmy Buckets back in November. Take more shots. It's up to him. 312-235-2525, and then comes a report that Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler have some tension. Dan Bernstein put it out there with an article for CBS. Interesting. Interesting stuff that he and Jimmy Buckets might not be on the same page.
I've never felt that, except for maybe one time where Butler was asked about Rose, and he said it was after one of the Milwaukee games, one of the games at Milwaukee, and Butler said something along the lines of, listen, if I'm Derrick Rose's running mate, if I'm his, you know, kind of his Scotty to his Michael, he didn't put it like that, but basically running mate, then I'm cool with that. And it was just kind of interesting the way he said it, which almost, it almost felt to me like you wanted to be the alpha dog a little bit. But come on, both those guys know they need each other to win, especially on this team. They're the only two guys that can score. Unless Powell's out there, which he wasn't at that point. That being said, Butler did leave Game 6, didn't talk to the media, not professional.
Nope.
Last game of the year, you're Jimmy Butler, you're going to get a max contract, you answer questions, and as long as anybody wants to talk. Rose stood there at his locker, three waves of people, took all the questions, said he, and was very positive about Tibbs, was positive about himself, said he wanted to get in the gym right now. Derrick Rose is not the type of guy that doesn't get along with people. He's never been that guy. You really think that he's got a deep problem with Jimmy Butler? I just don't believe that. I don't. One little, maybe a moment in time that perhaps happened. Okay, but I don't buy that Rose is now this. I can't get along with guy people.
You realize that Jimmy Butler and Derrick Rose, after Butler signs his extension, will account for $36 million next year and $38 the year after, making them the single most expensive backcourt in the NBA.
Yeah, well, they're gonna have to live up to it.
If I told you you could have any backcourt, who are you taking?
You know, I'd probably take Golden State at this point.
No question. I mean, it's not even close.
Right, but listen, I'll take Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler and ride with that and feel very comfortable. I think Rose is going to have a great season next year. Yes, I tend to be optimistic, Derrick Rose, but he finished the year healthy. He's going to work as hard as you can work this summer. I'm optimistic on Rose next season. Not 10 years from now, I don't think the body holds up, but I think he can get through a couple of years here.
The article says there's a reason why Derrick Rose shriveled in the loss to the Cavaliers that ended the Bulls season last Thursday, and it's not good no matter how you look at it. It made little sense that Rose attempted only 4 second-half shots, scored just one basket, attempted no free throws as his team surrendered meekly, he's being kind, on its home floor in a 94-73 setback in Game 6 of the Eastern Conference Semis. After a blistering first quarter, which he shot 5 of 9 and handed out 3 assists, he would score just four more points after that and seem reluctant to attack the basket in what was the biggest game of his career. Rose was never asked directly why he disappeared, but sources tell 670 The Score that a common NBA problem affected the Bulls at the worst possible time. Two alpha dogs and only one basketball. It looked strange when wing Jimmy Butler kept flashing to Rose's side of the floor, calling for the ball as the Bulls' offense dried up. Rose, too happy to oblige, instead of waving Butler off and taking charge after either resetting the call play or taking his man off in the undrafted Matthew Dellavedova hard to the rim for at least a likely foul. But sources describe a passive-aggressive reaction from Rose that was the culmination of tensions building in recent weeks with Butler's emergence as a primary scorer. If one were to try to give Rose the benefit of the doubt, seeing a selfless point guard willing to cede the spotlight and responsibility to the hotter hand in the best interest of winning, it'd be a tough case to build. Even though the Bulls trailed by two after the first, the offense had clicked, scoring 31 points on 57% shooting, and catalyzed by Rose's active, determined play, it was Butler trying to force the issue in the miserable second quarter, missing four of six shots, 2 3-point attempts, as the Bulls managed 13 points.
I mean, this is normal stuff in an NBA game. Guys are going to have little moments like that. Forget even NBA, on any level, on a pickup game, you're like, hey, man, why are you shooting that much? I mean, I don't. This is not something that's significant going forward. And take it easy on my guy Derek. By the way, text line 312-235-2525 on our Tibbs conversation. Listen, look at this. 847, Pax and Gar need to go. Get them out. 618, Gar and Pax deserve a lot of the blame, yet they never get any. 815, what about firing Paxson and Gar? 847, if Thibodeau and Gar can't get along, why does Tibbs have to go get rid of Gar? 708, should Jerry fire Pax? I mean, it is the fandom.
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of that on Twitter. And again, I'm a huge Tom Thibodeau fan, and if I bought a team today and he's available, that's who I'm hiring. I am. That said, I don't believe, as the situation is presently constituted, that you can get these guys in a room and fix what's wrong. No.
I agree.
It's irreconcilable differences.
And I agree with you there. I'll also say this, and I wish that what Tibbs was saying too, but I don't look at it, Cap, like Tom Thibodeau is this irreplaceable coach that if they bring in Fred Hoiberg or whoever, that all of a sudden the team is rebuilding. Those whoever's coming in here
trying to win,
yeah, they have a ton of pressure on them. You have to do better than Tom Thibodeau. Now, would that make anybody shy away from the job? I would doubt it, because these are competitive people. But that's going to be the expectation.
So does Fred Hoiberg intrigue you?
Yes, he does.
Me too.
Fred Hoiberg's a guy who's, I think it's huge to have played in the league to know what players go through. Fred Hoiberg crosses off that criteria. He's been in an NBA front office in Minnesota. He's been in Chicago. And Fred Hoiberg's always struck you as a guy who's, you know, an intelligent dude. He's a little, you know, if you compare him to Steve Kerr, Kerr is kind of, he's funnier. He's got a little more worldly perspective.
Well, he was a TV personality.
Right, right.
Fred Hoiberg may be the same guy, just hasn't had a chance to show it.
I mean, I've talked to Fred Hoiberg. I like Fred Hoiberg. But he's not the personality that Steve Kerr is. He just isn't. Now, can he relate to Derrick Rose, Jimmy Butler, whoever? I would think he could. But part of the reason why Steve Kerr has been so good at his job, outside of his, you know, the pedigree, he got Steph Curry to do things that he hasn't done in the past. I mean, he's really connected with these guys. That'll be one of the huge challenges for Fred.
The amazing thing is, if this happens a year earlier, the Bulls probably hire Steve Kerr.
And that would have been highly criticized, and people would have been highly wrong if it went that way.
That's my point. Like David said, you can't tell me, make a case that the Bulls will be better if they make a move. You don't know that, because look what Steve Kerr became.
And you want to go back in Bulls time, it was not popular when they got rid of Doug Collins.
Oh, people went crazy.
I mean, it was highly unpopular.
They went to the Eastern Conference Finals, lost, fired Doug, and everyone went, you're doing what? And then Phil comes in, and he's the greatest coach ever.
I remember listening to my old buddy Seth Marks called in on a radio show that night and started talking about Phil Jackson's an unbelievable hire. Bulls are about to be in a dynasty. I think it was Chet Kopic at the time doing the show. I'm like, you're out of your mind. My buddy calling in sounded like a complete moron.
He was right.
He worked out that way.
All right, grab a timeout and get some of your calls. You want Thibs back? What do you think? 312-235-2525. It's Cap and Haw. Mark in for David. Be right back.
Now back to Cap and Haw on WGNplus.com and CSN Chicago.
I'm on record. Mark the tape. Bulls and Clippers meet in the NBA Finals.
All right.
Mm. Okay.
11:42.
That would be sick.
So
on October
awesome.
29th. Exactly 25 hours after you suggested the Bears trade for Johnny Manziel.
Terry, the inbounds to Papanikolaou. 8 seconds to go. They will dribble it out. Game over. Series over. As the Rockets channel their inner Clutch City to become just the ninth team in NBA history to rally from a 3-1 series deficit. Your final score, Houston 113, Los Angeles 100.
That was October 29th when I predicted Bulls and Clippers, and I almost got it right. Clip Joint completely soiled themselves. Welcome back. I'm Cap and Haw, Mark Carmen in for David, who's out in California covering the Blackhawks. Don't forget the Cap and Haw Rewind tonight at 11 on CSN.
Highly irritated with myself on the Clippers because I've been doing fan rankings from about the, or rather, NBA power rankings from about the midseason on, and I was crushing the Clippers. Had them 10th, 11th, 12th best team in the league. And then Haw asked me, do some power rankings for what's left in the league. I'm looking at him like, oh, I guess I got to give credit to the Clippers. They're up 3-1.
And they completely gag.
And then they gag it away. That team, Blake Griffin, I'm sorry. Even Chris Paul, who, great player, 10 years now in the league, though never been to the Western Conference Finals. You're up 3-1 on that Rockets team.
And you have a 19-point lead late third.
Right.
In game six.
Yeah. And Harden doesn't play in the fourth because he's sick and he's not playing well. And you got to score 40-15 on your home court.
Actually, 49-18.
You're never talking about a group that needs a blowing up, even though they're competitive.
That was absolutely brutal. All right. By the way, coming up tonight, Cleveland at White Sox at 7 on CSN. I'll have Sports Talk Live tonight at 5:30. So don't forget. 312-235-2525. Look at the roster. Derrick Rose is owed $20,093,000 next season, $21.3 million the following year. Then he's a free agent. Joakim, one more year at $13.4 million. Taj, two more years at $8.5 million and $8.95 million. Pau Gasol, next year at $7.4 million. Following year, player option at $7.7 million. Mirotić locked up for two more. Dunleavy's a free agent. Heinrich has a player option. He's going to take that player option.
Of course.
For $2.87 million. McDermott, obviously, on his entry-level contract. Jimmy Buckets will get paid big. Tony Snell still locked up.
Let me ask you,
the whole thing. How are you fixing that thing?
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think McDermott will be a contributing player next year? Six,
yes.
Seven, 8 points a game?
Yes.
Okay. You think that Tony Snell takes a step forward?
Not sure. I'm not a huge Tony Snell guy, but I wasn't when they drafted him.
Okay, but he did show flashes this year, and it'd be hard for him to go backwards. Fair enough?
Agreed.
Okay.
The Snelly cat.
Right. Joakim Noah, as much as you want to down him, and I know you're worried about his physical, but can he play any worse than he played this year? Can he really be that bad again? Is it going to fall apart further? Or after a summer further away from surgery, working out as hard as he says he's going to work out, does Noah at least maybe get, I don't know, 30% closer to where he was?
Well,
when
unless you can inject his knees with lubricant, no, I don't think he gets better.
Okay, I'm on the side that Noah's going to have a better year next year than he does.
You're on the side that Mark Pryor's still
okay,
healthy.
Okay, that's not convolute what's going on.
That's
true. I think it's a very logical look that Noah will be better next year than this. Now, Pau Gasol was phenomenal this year. 54 double doubles, but
I don't think he can do that again.
Right, but in the playoffs, he was basically nothing. So you would hope when money time comes next year, Powell's better. Rose, full off season where he's actually healthy, should be better. Jimmy is in his prime. There's a lot of room for
Mirotić.
Mirotić. There's a lot of room for growth here. You make one, whatever solid tweak to the roster that you can do, it's most likely not going to come in the draft. You're picking in the 20s. But there's no reason why they're not right back there next year. And I know that Cleveland most likely, if Love will be back there, and but Kyrie's been hurt his whole career.
Kyrie's a great player.
Great player, but can't stay on the court. They'll be climbing
up. Derek can. You got Derek another year better, and you don't have Kyrie?
I get that. But listen, you'll be climbing uphill most likely against Cleveland again, but you're right there. There's no you have no other choice but just to load it all up again and hope for the best. You want to bring in a coach you think you can get more out of him? Go ahead. Clearly they're going to do that. But I don't look at it like just because they went out to Cleveland again or to LeBron again that it's all over. They'll never do it. There's still too much right in the middle of everyone's little
pow,
window.
Pow, pow, pow is not going to be as good next year as he was this year.
Pow, pow, pow! Pow, pow, pow is just fine. Pow, pow, pow will get it done. He'll float around.
He's a damn good player. I'm just telling you, I look at that roster. I look at the other great teams. I've watched a lot of NBA playoff basketball, and I just don't think that team can win a title. I don't.
I'm not saying they can, but I think they're right there. In my mind, there's really no choice but to, hey, let's see if we can tweak it somehow, but we're going to go at it again. We're going to try to get there.
You ain't first, you're last. You see Chris Paul after the game yesterday? They said, boy, you know, it's just the farthest the Clippers have gone. You guys had a chance. He said, like Ricky Bobby said, if you ain't first, you're last. Jeff in Peoria. Hey, Jeff, welcome.
Bam. How you guys doing?
Good. What's up? What's on your mind?
Yeah, I think Gar Foreman is the person, along with Paxton, that's causing a problem on that team. I mean, if you got Tom Thibodeau trying to coach a team with these guys that placing minutes on players, I don't understand that. They just keep their nose out of it and manage what they have to do, but let Tom take care of the damn team.
Well, Jeff, look, they played Joakim Noah 1,000 fewer minutes than he did a year ago. 1,000. And he still couldn't stay healthy and looked awful in the playoffs. Well, so I have no problem with certain minutes restrictions. Jeff, do you think this team could have won a title?
No, I don't think they're not good enough to win the title.
So,
they got a team that's going to look like they're going to fight for it, so on and so forth, but they're never going to climb over the Cavaliers or the teams out west. No, never going to do it.
Hey, Jeff, when they were up 11 in the end of the third quarter in game four, what were you thinking?
I was thinking that there was a possibility, but at the same time,
there you
I
go.
Know that when they get to the third and fourth quarter, Joakim falls back, and you can't play foul that much.
Jeff, thanks, buddy. Appreciate the call. Look, you can keep trumpeting all you want. They're up 11 late in the third.
It's true.
They didn't seal the deal.
I understand that.
Period.
I understand that. Listen, you had huge friction.
What do you think about the Clippers?
What do I think?
They were up 19. Well, they were up 19. They couldn't close the damn deal.
Listen.
Period.
That's a good way to put it back, man, the Clippers, and I like how you did that, and well done. But let me just say this again. You would agree with this. Huge friction between management and Tibbs, right? Do you think that helped the team this year?
No.
No, it didn't. Okay.
That's why you cannot bring the same group back again.
Okay, fine. So you're removing Tibbs out of there. You're taking away that friction. Everybody in
Tibbs is going to go win a title somewhere else. And everyone's going to be, why didn't that happen here?
He might go win multiple titles if Cleveland removes David Blatt. I mean, that's a no-brainer move if you're the Cavs.
Bulls will never let that happen.
They won't have a choice. If Tibbs is not going to allow himself to get traded, they're going to have to fire him. And then he can go wherever he wants to go.
They are not going. They're going to make a deal and get him to New Orleans.
Okay.
There's no chance he's coaching the Cavs.
Mark the tape. There is a 0% chance that he will ever allow himself to be traded. He's not getting traded to New Orleans, even if he wants to go there, and I don't know if he does, or Orlando, or anywhere else. Like he said after game six, I'm the coach until they tell me I'm not. It's not going to be we're all getting into some room and, hey, we're going to get a second-round pick and ship to New Orleans. No chance he's going to bend over for him. Zero. Fire me fire me. I'm telling you, fire me or I'm coming back. I'll do the same damn thing again.
I'm not paying attention to it. It's all noise.
I'll tell you what. That would be hilarious. I'm telling you, if I bought a team, that would be the guy I'd hire.
And tell me if you're not Cleveland, you got David Blatt there.
And they're not firing David Blatt.
Okay. Maybe they're not. You're Cleveland. David Kaplan owns the Cleveland Cavaliers. You telling me you're not launching David Blatt and hiring Tom Thibodeau?
Tonight.
Damn right you are. I mean, all day.
And I don't think David Blatt's as bad as you guys do.
I don't. Hey, listen. I'm not sitting here grading every move that David Blatt makes. Listening to him talk makes me sick. I just don't really get a whole lot of a David Blatt press conference. I think he's smug and the whole deal. But
something I think that is paralleled only by a fighter pilot.
Yeah, right. Comparing his job to a fighter pilot. Just settle down, Blatt. Yeah.
That was the stupidest comment ever. Let's go to the phones. 312-235-2525. We'll go to Michael in Richton Park. Michael, what's going on there, Sparkles?
How you doing, guys?
What's up, buddy?
Here's my question. My question to you is, do you think Thibodeau brung those players on the bench along throughout the season to make this a better team?
Say it again.
Yeah, what was that?
Do you think Thibodeau brung those guys along on the bench, Snell, McDermott, give them enough playing time to build their confidence to make them a better team when it comes to playoff time?
Right. I mean, that's a popular take that Tom Thibodeau killed the confidence of Tony Snell.
It's a legitimate question.
Is it?
But Tom was raised under Jeff Van Gundy. Michael, thanks for the call. Jeff Van Gundy, his philosophy, and I had one of his assistants, former assistants, Kevin O'Neill, tell me, he was with Tibbs together in New York. He goes, we were assistants together. Jeff tells us you shrink the rotation when you get to the playoffs. You don't worry about development. You worry about winning basketball games, period.
I'm a Tony Snell fan, okay? I like the guy. I don't think Tony Snell on any roster in the NBA given 30 minutes a night is going to turn into some primetime player. No way.
Agreed. 312-235-2525. We'll get back to this. So hang in there, James in Park Forest, Robert in Bellwood, Deontay on the south side. Phone lines are locked and loaded. Mark Lazarus will join us for a few minutes as well to talk about the Blackhawks and the Ducks and his favorite movie, Draft Day. We'll be right back.
It's Cap and Haw.
Controlled by Fowler.
Saved by Anderson. He wouldn't give up on the play.
That is simply outstanding.
I knew that I had to just try and throw my stick over and take as much of the net as I could, and then luckily he hit the stick.
Yeah, he's good. He's a good goaltender. I think we expected that. He's a battler, and you saw that on numerous saves he had tonight, where it seems like we had a good chance to score and he gets a leg or a stick on it. So we knew that was a scouting report on him. Just got to bear down a little bit more on those opportunities.
That was Kaner and Freddie Anderson talking about the ridiculously impressive save that Anderson made on a wide-open net. It looked like Kane was going to give the Hawks a 1-0 lead yesterday. They ended up losing the game 4-1. Came from a two-goal deficit, cut it in half, and then late empty net goal off the body of Jonathan Toews clinched it 4-1. Ducks, two teams back at it tomorrow night. Mark Lazarus, who is probably back in his hotel room watching the movie Draft Day, joins us now. Laz, good morning. How are you, buddy?
I would rather be running headfirst into the wall repeatedly than watch that movie one more time.
That movie's so good, but we'll talk about that later. All right, let's talk about yesterday. At the start of the playoffs, I said to David, my biggest fear for the Hawks is they only play 4.5 defensemen, the half being Michael Roosevelt playing about 17 minutes a game. You got Seabrook and Keith playing heavy minutes, Jalmerson heavy minutes. They don't use Tiimonen. They don't like to use Runblad, and he was costly yesterday. Will that be their undoing if they don't win this series?
It could be. I mean, it's a concern when you're playing four defensemen, but the Hawks won the Cup playing five. Nick Leddy was not playing anything in those last three games against Boston in 2013. Joel Quenneville tends to shorten things up a little bit in the third period of tight games in the playoffs. It's a concern, but on the other hand, there's only a maximum of 13 games left in the season. You can ride Duncan Keith and Nicholas Jalmerson and Brent Seabrook and Johnny Oduya for 13 games and probably get away with it. The question is, will the Ducks of all teams, will they be able to wear these guys out? You heard Ryan Kesler talk about that yesterday. They got a lot of guys playing a ton of minutes. We're going to hit them. We're going to finish our checks, and we're going to try to tire them out. If they succeed, if they take one out, if someone gets hurt, if someone gets a nagging kind of injury, then they're in a whole lot of trouble because you can't do less than four, that's for sure.
Mark, we've had a couple creative callers today. One had Scott Darling moving to defense. The other had Marian Hossa. I'm wondering if you were trying to get creative Mark Lazarus, what would you – and I agree with you, by the way. Listen, 13 games to go here, whatever. Ride them into the ground, they'll make it. But if you were going to try to get creative, what would you do, if anything?
I would put Keith and Seabrook back together. I would keep Oduya and Jalmerson together. And I would put Runblad and Thiemann in together as a third pairing. Shelter them as best you can, especially at home games. Play them 8 minutes a night, offensive zone starts only. Pray that the ice doesn't get flipped and you get a little bit of rest for your top guys. But you ride your horses. Marian Hossa could probably play defense, although actually Chris Versteeg would be the guy who would move back to defense because he actually was a defenseman in junior hockey. And Joel's actually mentioned that from time to time. I mean, if you were desperate, Chris Versteeg would be a defenseman right now. But David Rundblad's a better defenseman than Chris Versteeg. It's a silly option, and it's not going to happen. They're going to ride four guys. Rundblad's probably going to play because they don't have another right-handed shot. Kyle Komiski would be on the wrong side, so he doesn't really help in this regard. You're just going to have to shelter Rundblad and Thiemann as best you can. Honestly, Thiemann should be playing a little more probably. He hasn't been bad at all. But he gets 73 seconds in the third period. For whatever reason, Joel Quenneville is not going to put him out there for any more than that.
The power play looked awful yesterday. Why?
Because it was a Blackhawks power play? I don't know. This is what it looks like. But
I
honestly
still don't understand how you can have Hall of Fame talent and Kane and Taves and Hossa and a great player in Sharp, just to name four, and it looks pathetic.
I remember it was earlier in the year. I asked Marian Hossa that question. She said, "I have no idea. There's no reason for it. We just don't. It doesn't seem to work sometimes." Give credit to the Ducks. Their penalty kill was fantastic yesterday. Very aggressive. I mean, you saw Ryan Kesler and I think it was Silverberg had a great chance shorthanded on the first power play. Pretty much the first 60 to 90 seconds of every power play, the Ducks were the aggressors, and then the Hawks would kind of settle in the last 30 seconds, get a little pressure, get a chance off. Brandon Saad should have scored on one of those power plays in the third. Frederick Anderson made a fantastic save on a rebound on that Richard shot. They tend to create their chances. They just don't get that 2 minutes of sustained pressure you'd like to see. There's so much talent out there that they're going to score eventually, but they're just so inconsistent. I'd like to see Teuvo Teravainen maybe get on one of those units, get kind of a Kane-like creative force on the second unit. There's a lot of options you could have out there to maybe make it a little bit better. But the fact is that the Hawks were getting boxed out in front by the big Ducks defensemen. They weren't getting shots through, and they weren't able to hold the point. They always pass too many times. They don't go for the simple play. They go for the highlight reel play. It's the same problems we've been talking about for years with this power play. It's just never going to be a great power play. It hasn't been in years, and it doesn't have to be, as long as they can kill penalties and score 5-on-5.
Let's talk Ducks' third line here, Mark, because do I really need to learn these names, the speedy center, Andrew Cogliano, and a Kyle Palmieri, and a Nate Thompson? I'd like to make him Nate Robinson. I mean, I know that plus six yesterday, nine shots, and before that they were solid, but is this going to be a problem all series long in your mind?
Well, it's funny because that was the dominant storyline coming in, was that, well, the Hawks have all the depth and the Ducks are a two-line team, and then the two lines get neutralized and it's their third line that comes through. It was very Hawk-like of them to have, you know, their depth guys produce the scoring. I don't know if they can do it all series long. If they can, then the Hawks are in a lot of trouble, though, because it's always the Hawks' depth that wins out in these series. It's, you know, you go back to 2013 and that fourth line of Bolin, Kruger, and Frolik, nobody could match that on a fourth line. And this year, their fourth line was one of the better ones yesterday, too. But you need scoring. You need that Vermette line to be able to do what the Cogliano line did yesterday. You need to have more than just Taves and Kane scoring goals. Right. So if the Ducks can do that, then the Hawks are in trouble.
All right, so we had the freak-out calls that want Hossa and Darling playing defense tomorrow night. And then we had the other end of the spectrum. Hawks are going to sweep the next four. They're far more talented, and nobody has any worries. All right, do you believe, after watching yesterday, I thought the Hawks are a significantly more skilled team, but it looked to me like Bruce Boudreau said at practice, okay, every single time you hit them, I want a little extra jump in that hit, a little extra elbow, whatever it takes, because it looked like they were out there trying to inflict pain.
Well, as always, I'm in between the two freak-out sides of things. It's unlikely the Hawks are going to win the next four. Is it impossible? Absolutely not. But the Hawks were the better team for probably 30, 35 minutes of that game yesterday, significantly so. The Hawks can beat the Ducks. The Hawks probably should beat the Ducks. But people were writing off the Ducks as some kind of overmatched, you know, nothing heading into the series. People were overconfident. It was very unusual for Hawks fans to be overconfident. But that was the sense I got, was that they thought they were going to steamroll these guys. This is a really good team. This is the best team in the West the last two regular seasons, and now they have a little playoff experience. They've won two series now. They have a goalie who believes in himself, in Frederik Andersen. They have a team that believes in him. It's not going to be easy, but all the Ducks did yesterday was hold serve. I mean, you just got to win one on the road out of the four. The Hawks are the better team here. I believe that. And they were, and they played better, and they can win this series. But everyone who thinks this is going to be a cakewalk is deluding themselves.
What about the Kessler-Taze matchup? Can the Blackhawks do a better job, perhaps, of freeing Jonathan Taze?
Maybe when they get home, where they get last change.
Exactly. When Boudreau has the last change in Anaheim, he's going to sick Kessler on Taze, and Kessler's really good. There's a reason the Hawks desperately wanted him last summer. He's really good. And he's had those wars with Taze over the years, and I think in Anaheim he's going to do a pretty good job of neutralizing that line. But once they get to Chicago and Taze gets freed up from that matchup, I think you're going to see that line, Saad, Taze, Hossa, start scoring again, producing a lot again, and that's the chess match here. I mean, Bruce Boudreau said he has to outwit Joel Quenneville, and he wasn't sure he could do it, but he was going to try. Well, game one went to Boudreau.
What was the price, now looking back, for the Hawks to have acquired Ryan Kessler?
What was the price?
Yeah, what would they have had to give up to get him?
Well, I know that Teravainen was talked about, and there was no way the Hawks were going to give up Teravainen, nor should they have. But it was going to be high-round picks. I don't remember exactly what the Canucks got for Kessler. I'd have to go check that. But the asking price was high, and the Hawks were willing to pay for the most part. They were willing to give up a lot for him, but they wound up signing Richards instead for $2 million without giving up anything. I think that's a better deal for them. You saw the effect Richards had on Patrick Kane this year. It was Patrick Kane's best year. I think now is a time of year where you would love to have Ryan Kessler, or for no other reason you wouldn't have to play against him.
Here was the trade.
I don't think he's the one that got away or anything.
Vancouver traded Kessler and a third-round pick to Anaheim for center Nick Bonino, defenseman Luca Spisa,
right,
and Anaheim's first and third-round picks in the 2014 draft.
That's a lot, and I know the Hawks wound up giving up a lot of picks at the trade deadline for Vermette and Teeminen, and that hasn't worked out beautifully for them necessarily. But at the time, that was a very high asking price, and Brad Richards was a really good fallback option. I don't think that this is like the one that got away or anything, but man, if you put Ryan Kessler in this team, then this is a really scary team.
Where if he was a Hawk?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy for us.
It's a different kind of second-line center than Brad Richards is.
It's easy for us to play Monday morning quarterback or Monday morning GM. But if you look back to last offseason, giving up Nick Leddy for some, you know, draft picks, bringing in Brad Richards, not acquiescing to the demand that he's on the roster from Kevin Hayes will turn out to be, it looks like, a bad decision. And maybe all the picks you gave up to get Teeminen and Vermette, if you had packaged all that up with something, you might have been able to get Ryan Kessler. Your team looks radically different.
Well, like you said, very easy to say that in hindsight. I don't think anyone really saw Kevin Hayes being this good right off the bat as a rookie. That one might be one that got away, but Kevin Hayes didn't want to come here.
He would have had they promised he was on the roster.
I'm not entirely convinced of that, but you think the Blackhawks want to set that precedent where a guy who's never played in the NHL can demand a roster spot? That's a dangerous precedent.
It is, but when he's 6'5", 225, and that's exactly what you need?
There was some lingering bad blood over the Jimmy Hayes thing. I didn't think that was going to work out in any way. The picks they gave up at the trade deadline, they're going to get that back because they're going to have to move some big names this summer to get under the cap. So that, I think that's why they were willing to move that first and second rounder to get Vermette and Teeminen, because they're going to get those picks back. But you're right. I mean, Kessler, but the Canucks were pushing hard for Teuvo Teravainen. Would you have given up Teuvo Teravainen for Ryan Kessler?
No.
Yeah, really? Yeah. So I mean, I think that's what it came down to.
No shot.
And the Leddy trade, Ville Poka is going to be a good player for them. There's a goalie they got in that's out in Sweden right now, and people I've talked to say he's really good. It's way too early to pass judgment on the Leddy trade, but man, Leddy would have been good on the power play this year.
No question. Well, you have to go to practice today, right?
I do.
And then what do you do tonight?
I enjoy Southern California.
I've got a suggestion for you.
Okay.
Your dad drafted me.
No, Drew, I drafted you because I believed in you.
Then why pick Callahan?
I'm going to do what's best for the team.
You're an idiot.
I think you need to go buy that on iTunes and sit in your room with a pizza and watch that.
I think you need to get your head checked.
I got some better options for you. There's the Game and Entertainment Center here, Lazzy. You can go and do all sorts of video games and actual physical activity. It's number 7 of the 47 things to do in Anaheim.
Hey, the Cubs are in San Diego. That's only an hour and a half away.
Tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Missed it by one.
Yeah. That's not going to work out for you.
I think I'm going to watch some hockey and have a tasty beverage or two.
All right. You enjoy. See if you can get David Haw to get the moths out of his pocket and buy you one.
We'll see.
All right. Have a good day. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Talk to you later. See ya. There he is, Mark Lazarus from the Chicago Sun-Times. Does a great job on the Blackhawks beat, and he's an awesome guy. Love him. Love him. Anyway, 312-235-2525. Get the ultimate experience with the all-new Samsung Curved 4K Ultra HD TV at Apton Glenview. With the Samsung 4K Curved Ultra HD, you get the fastest internet and smart TV functions available. Come into App today, see the complete selection of Samsung electronics, or call them at 847-544-2228. 847-544-2228. For complete satisfaction, free delivery, a better experience, shop where we shop. It's Apt, A-B-T. Apt, pleasing people, since 1936. Ask for our buddy, Steve Shapiro. We'll take a time out, talk a little baseball, and get to your calls next. There's a lot of Bulls combo. People want to talk Bulls. Do you keep Tibbs? Do you keep Garn Pax? Do you figure it out like David Haw said? What do you do? 312-235-2525. You're watching Comcast SportsNet. Listening to WGN Plus, it's Cap and Haw.